Normal people can be at the top of their game in the business world and as parents, but it can sometimes be difficult to stay above it all. Now it's time to learn from an entrepreneur who has made this a reality. Welcome to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood, hosted by Chris Efesiou. Chris and his guests will share ideas and experiences to help you manage your life in business and as a parent. Now, here's Chris Efesiou.
At the office, you pride yourself at being efficient, having a sense of order, productivity, and control. You're disciplined, and you expect the same of your team. Do you do the same at home? We all want to raise a responsible child in a healthy family while avoiding some of the common pitfalls in the process. But how exactly do we do that? Do we train and mentor our children much like we do our employees? Do we praise them and reward them appropriately, or do we overpraise them? Do you appropriately manage your child's self-esteem and encourage risk-taking balanced with developmental readiness? Whatever your answers might be, what is required to arrive happily at the end of that road by parents and children alike is discipline, emotional restraint. You're listening to Straight Up with Chris, broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. I'm Chris Efesiou, and my guest today is Barbara Strom-Thompson. Barbara is a child developmental specialist with over 30 years of experience in the fields of child advocacy and family life, and she will help us decipher the maze of these parenting issues and give us the roadmap to self-control for ourselves and our children. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
May I ask you to share a bit about your background so that our listeners know the origin of where you come from?
All right. I'm glad to talk about my career path because when you're dealing with child development and families, there are just so many ways to be involved and to make a difference. I have a master's in early childhood education, and I've actually taught at the college level, and I've worked with in infant toddler programs. I would say one of the best aspects of my personal professional development was when I was a licensing specialist. And so I went around to all types of programs and to make sure that the programs were run according to regulations. And that was wonderful to just see the broad range. I've planned playgrounds. I'm very interested in how the lack of neighborhood play is affecting the socialization of children. So I started a friendship camp where children, instead of go from activity to activity, they learn to create their own fun. So, and I've worked with parents and teachers for the last 10 years as a consultant. So I spend a lot of time on those little chairs in classrooms, taking running records of children so that we can make sure that they're in a place where they're thriving and that the teachers can do their job too. So, and I could go on, but it's been just such a wonderful, broad scope of work that I've done. And it's very, I leave these classrooms with, usually with, I'm tired a lot because there's so much going on, but also there's so much potential in each young child.
Without question. So for the benefit of our listeners, I should say here that I first heard of Barbara by reading a chapter she wrote in a book that was edited by an individual who had actually put an awful lot of great information in that book. And I was struck by the wisdom and common sense of that chapter, as well as from the title of the book, which I don't know that she can actually do it justice reading it.
Yeah.
You actually have to say it out loud. The title of the book is Like Whatever, and it is A Guide to Raising Teenagers. I can tell you this, anyone who has ever raised a teenager, they have heard this like and whatever, and obviously of recent times most abbreviate the whatever, so it's whatevs. And so that alone is enough to drive any parent up a wall.
Exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was asked to participate in this compendium, a few people said they didn't like the title, and that drew me to it, because I just think, as you say, it says it all. And a lot of times with parents, we just really have to bite our tongues, because it's just not worth, you know, getting into this. And disengaging is a very valuable skill. So I'm with you, Chris. I really love that title.
Oh, I'll tell you, it's very few books have actually grabbed my attention just by their title as much as this one. But let's delve into the concept. So discipline, as in restraint as opposed to punishment, is a loaded and often scary concept.
Yeah.
Restraint, as in self-control, is often difficult for adults, let alone children.
Mm-hmm.
Where does one begin?
Well, you're right. Discipline is a loaded word. And, you know, my trusty Random House Dictionary has 12 different definitions or notations for it. And so many parents use the word discipline to replace the word punishment, and others use it to describe chastisement. But what I think is really important is it can also mean a category of mastery, and it can be a compliment, such as her discipline is poetry or his discipline is botany. And because really, for our kids to reach their potential, they have to learn to deal with frustration. And but with the discipline, we can help them kind of stay on the right path. And today, we're going to use the word discipline to mean fostering self-control. And it's not only the child who needs to learn self-control. We'll be focusing on the parents, too, and to hear how they can set a good example. You know, I think that in a lot of ways we are still dealing with the baby boomers. I call it I had one of my colleagues, we worked in this social skills camp together, and a lot of children who have trouble with self-control, you know, don't really have a lot of positive discipline at home. And so this colleague used to call it the baby boomers disease. And she meant that there were so many baby boomers who were very ambivalent about setting limits. And really, when children feel fearful when there aren't limits, and that firm and friendly and predictable and appropriate limits really help children feel well cared for. And so, you know, the word discipline, I mean, I could say, you know, no yelling, no bribes, no whining, but that doesn't help the child know what to do. So with the discipline, the way we set limits really helps shape the child's ability to go and problem solve in their work on the playground or their play. So it's very a child who grows up with firm and friendly limits that are very respectful. Really, that's just a wonderful gift to give your child, and also to help the home be a happier place, so that everyone can thrive in the home and not just, you know, the youngest child who needs a lot of help.
So would you say that children seek, require, want discipline?
Absolutely. And a lot of times they will you know, they will just turn up the volume again and again, and it's almost like when you see a child losing control with that, you can see it in their eyes in terms of someone set limits for me. And if I say have one of my campers in the camp, if I'm not if I'm not setting firm and friendly limits, you know, I'm bribing instead or something like that, that child will start misbehaving more and more to say, show me how this works. Because really what our job is in raising responsible children is to give them what they need to thrive in their social groups. And our homes are really the learning lab for that. And so sometimes parents are, you know, lackadaisical, or they're not setting limits in helpful ways for children. And that's what I like to get into, because a lot of times parents are talking way too much, or they're telling the child what not to do rather than what to do. And that's not helpful. Children can't really learn from the negative. It would be as if I came on your show and I said, okay, parents, don't yell, don't hit, no bribes, no whining. And I just told them what not to do. And you would get a lot of response like, well, that was a big nothing. So a lot of parents, they need to talk less. Well, really prepare their child for what's going to happen next. A lot of discipline problems happen during the transitions. It's almost like if we could pick up our children and get them in the classroom, or, you know, out of the house, into the car, they're doing fine, but it's in the transitions that are very difficult for them, especially for younger children.
What do you mean by transitions?
So, for instance, in a program that I might be leading, the kids are fine and they're thriving, but then it's time to go down. We're going to go down and, ride bikes or play some games down on the playground. And in that, lining up, getting there, what they want to bring outside to play, who's going to be in front, who's going to run, and you're not supposed to run down the steps. It's the transition. Kids, really, transitions are difficult for children. It's hard. A lot of times, you know, they're playing and they're at an age, or it might be the way their hearing and their attention is working or is challenged, that they don't anticipate what's going to happen next. And so that's why if you really watch a great first or second grade teacher, and you'll think, oh my gosh, how did they get everyone out to the bus and in a line and no one fell, where I can't even get my child out to the parking lot to get to school. So when you're working with the groups, let's just say you're on an overnight camping or you're having a birthday party, it's just you do yourself a good favor by having something to do during the transition. And that might be, you know, that the kids are singing a new Echo song, or they have some new balloons or whatever, because it's children, they don't like the transitions. If they're having a good time, they kind of want to stay put. And so,
could that be when everything goes bananas during the transition, could that be because during the transition period is when the limits that have been given to the children are dropped or relaxed?
Yes. It's easier. A child who darts out or who's going to, you know, grab someone's ball that they wanted to play with, and the teacher can't really go focus on that because they have to, you know, there has to be a teacher to make sure that the cars aren't in the parking lot that you're passing through. And it's also that I think for a lot of children, you know, they don't have that great of sense of time, even in the earliest years, and so they're not quite sure what's going to happen next. And
Let's pick that up at the other side of the break. Let's take a short break, and we'll be back with more. I'm Chris FSU, and I'm here with my guest, Barbara Strong-Thompson. And you're listening to Straight Up with Chris on Voice America Variety Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris Epicu understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Tune in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living on VoiceAmerica.com every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This program brings you practical and inspiring principles for living a more authentic, engaging, and passionate life. Patricia's guests will give you a formula for connecting, giving, forgiving, and miraculous living. So tune in and call in to Patricia Raskin Positive Living Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 11 a.m. Pacific Time right here on the Voice America Variety Channel. It's practical, positive solutions for a happy, empowered, and successful life.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. Please feel free to call us with questions and or email us at chris@straightupwithchris.com. For more information on the show and other activities, you can always visit the website chrisefesiou.com or cdochiefdaddyofficer.com. Also look at our Facebook page, Chris Efesiou, and follow us on Twitter at Chief Daddy Officer. And that last word, officer, is abbreviated as OFCR. I'm Chris Efesiou, and I'm here with my guest, Barbara Thompson, and before we went on break, we were talking about the importance of setting limits and how that is not only helpful for the parent, but desirable by the child. And unfortunately, as she was telling us, the most vulnerable time for those limits to collapse happened during transition times.
Right. So the smart, savvy teacher always plans for that. And I was describing a young girl who was worried about a situation. She wasn't going on a science trip. And, but she was smart enough and she knew she wanted to, had to, change the way she was socializing because she didn't want to sit alone on the bus. So the first time, she said, can I sit here? And the child said no. The second time, the same thing happened. The third time she remembered, don't keep doing what doesn't work. So she said, is anyone sitting here? And they said no. And she said, well, I am. And she came back with so much confidence just because she had a strategy. And
absolutely,
she tried something new.
And that's so true. And unfortunately, not necessarily us as parents, but us as we as society, and it's a necessary evil, I suppose, we're being unfair to younger children.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just look at it from this viewpoint. If you, whatever it is that you work, your employer has given you a book of policies and procedures. You know what to do, you know how to do it, you know what not to do, and what will happen if you didn't do it. There is no such thing as a policies and procedures manual for children, and therefore they will instinctively do what it is that they want to do. And as you mentioned during the previous segment, if the only thing we tell them is no, or don't do that, don't act this way, don't behave that way, but we do not tell them how it is that we expect them to behave, expect them to act, we are not teaching them anything. We're frustrating them, frustrating ourselves, and we're not advancing the point at all.
Right.
But besides fixing the problem, which is what we've been talking about in the last few minutes, I suppose preventing the problem from happening is a better strategy.
Right. And there are ways, I think, it's really important. These kids are so smart, and, you know, they put them on the computer next to my skills, and it's just, you know, they're just so accomplished in many ways. But what we have to realize is that they, especially in the first 8 or 9 years of life, they're just looking at problem solving in a very different way. And what I think where we really sell them short is fostering their independence and, you know, having appropriate schedules with them. They, young children, especially up until the age of 9, really need a lot of outdoor play. And it affects how the brain develops, using both sides of the body, and helps using both sides of the brain connect and everything. And now we trivialize. Really, there are schools that have a 15-minute recess, and they're not letting children have this opportunity to have large chunks of time so they can develop good attention spans and also to play outside and give them the ability to be creative, to be in touch with nature. We really have pretty tight parameters on childhood. And I hear from a lot of parents that, you know, that their children would thrive more. A lot of parents have this sense of grief about, oh, I used to get on my bike and I would ride and we would go into this little fort. And we don't, a lot of parents don't have that ability to give that to children. And that's really affecting their development, that being alienated from nature and the short attention span, I think, that I once had a colleague I was working with, and she said, you know, we're always pinging at them the next thing. And what we really should be doing is broadening their attention span. And that gets into our discipline discussion because, you know, it's just a very loaded word, and we tend to think of that as being something that children, that is harsh to children, but really discipline is, we mean to discipline is to help them foster their self-control.
Exactly.
And a child who doesn't have that really has a lot of fear.
I would imagine so. Let me just transition from discipline and the fear and concern and annoyance on everyone's part that comes along with that. And if discipline, we term it as directive, do this, mm-hmm. do that, whether it is proper discipline or improper, that's we've discussed the pluses and minuses of that. But the opposite end of that would seem to be praising the child too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in hearing your thoughts about that because I have some very strong beliefs of my own, and oftentimes I think that we overdo it at both ends of the spectrum. We are handing out perhaps too much discipline as in punishment,
mm-hmm.
Not enough discipline as in direction and structure, and then in a way to perhaps make ourselves feel better, we tend to overpraise children. Is there an appropriate amount of praise, and if so, when should it happen?
Well, first of all, I'd like to define praise, because praise focuses on being the best and being the first and being the top. And what I prefer is that we look, because intermittent praise is fine, but it's not as effective as encouragement. And encouragement focuses on the child's how the child feels about their work. They're committed to it if they love the work that they're doing. Their task persistence, you're not giving up on that puzzle. You've been working on that 3 days. Their contribution to say, you guys had already started the game, and I saw how you invited Jeffrey to join us. And so, and also how they feel about it. You love playing that game. A lot of time, what I find when in my classes is when I, or the camp programs, children who receive rote praise, excessive praise about that, meaning that they're the best and what they've done is the tops and they finished first, that they, kids don't praise each other. And so a lot of times the kids who grow up with this rote and routine praise, they have some social problems because, you know, they'll say to a teacher, oh, you want to look at my picture? And if a teacher's praising, oh, you're the best artist, and then they show it to a friend, say, look at my picture, well, a peer the same age is going to go, uh-huh, look at mine. They don't, and so it's almost like the excessive praise that a child gets, it takes away, oftentimes, from, you know, if I overpraise something where it was a certain, let's just say it's a certain pattern, a certain color, and I go, oh, I love that, that's the best picture, then the child's going to get stuck on that versus what the next creative step would have been if she had just been encouraged. And I have to tell you that this is a very hard habit to break if you overpraise. Because that's cheap. It's like, yeah, that's terrific. That's the best. And it comes cheap, but it can get in the way of the child's work ethic. And it was something because I had, and certain kids are more at risk for this, for the negative side of excessive praise. And that's the firstborn child, and girls are more at risk than this, and the only child. And I had all, my daughter's an only child, so I was very careful about this. And I was really good at encouraging her and supporting her. But, you know, I was very careful about my use of praise. And one of my proudest moments as a mom, she's now in college and was talking about,
Let's go on a short break, and we'll be back and discuss quite a bit more of what is praise, what appropriate praise is, and how it should be delivered. So we'll be back shortly, and stay tuned. You're listening to Chris FSU, and I'm here with my guest, Barbara Strom-Thompson, on Straight Up with Chris, Voice America Variety Channel. We'll be back in a moment.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris FSU understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities. Go behind the scenes of what you see, hear, and read on the news. Learn the ins and outs of public relations on Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Cindy Rakowitz is a Clio Award winner and is the co-founder of BR Public Relations, who wants to share her PR experiences and knowledge with you. Learn how to handle a crisis, deal with celebrities, and become a terrific PR executive. Listen to The Stars of PR with Cindy R. every Thursday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris, real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm your host, Chris Efesiou, and I'm here with my guest, Barbara Strom-Thompson. And before we went on break, we were talking about the appropriate level and amount of praise that should be given to a child versus overpraising the child for something that they perhaps it's a more of a menial task than a real achievement. And my concern with that, Barbara, is that, and I will give you an example that every time I think about it, I'm still dumbstruck at that. I was, several years ago, I was at a soccer game. I think the players on each team could not have been more than 8 or 10 years old. So, as always, one team wins and one team loses. 11 players on each team, 22 trophies handed out at the end of the game. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, well, I understand the concept that you do not want to make the child feel badly, but how are you preparing this child for later in life when they will not be coddled to the degree or in any kind of way that they are by their parents or other team members, so that we take in a very artificial way the sting of quote unquote loss and we replace it with a reward.
Yeah.
Tell me about the appropriateness of that.
Well, I mean, the sad thing about it is that it's, you know, there's not going to be the preparation because the kids know, and they feel this in terms of, I mean, not the very youngest. I mean, I've seen this in the 4-year-old soccer leagues now and everything. But the sad thing about this is that it's phony, and the kids have a sense of that. I mean, they like the trophies, but we're also passing up an important developmental opportunity to know what does it mean to be to play your best and you still didn't win. How do you learn to go congratulate the other team? Did you still have things you were proud about even though you lost? And so it's really, some of the lessons are very pernicious about that, but it's, I think we're selling our kids short that they can't find the resilience with support. And, you know, there might be some tears, but is the love of the game enough to keep going back to it? So I also have had a lot of concern about that concept. And it's almost like it takes away a lot of the reason we do play sports in terms of what we have this self-esteem movement where people think they can just give a child a trophy and that that's going to make them feel competent and confident and that they're contributing. These are lessons a child has to work through and also have the support of all the different emotional states that go through that to become competent. I mean, anyone who has a task in front of them, whether it's parenting or getting your master's or starting a business, there are going to be a lot of times where you're close to tears. But it's almost like we don't trust our children to be able to be resilient about it. And it's a serious issue, I think, that is it's pretty widespread. And
I just
think we've lost our common sense about this and that we can expect more of our children.
You're so right. And in my experience, praise is good, but telling them how proud we are of the effort is at least as good, if not better.
Yes. Excuse me, go on.
Yeah, I was just finish your thought because we're getting a number of email from our listeners, and I want to have an opportunity to answer some of those.
And when we don't know what to say, even just feeding back, you know, you guys really came out there and you scored two times, and then there was that pass. You could just be like a video camera. Reciting back for the child, and they'll learn something from that. That you know, that I get noticed and my efforts get noticed, even if the outcome isn't there. I don't have to have a trophy to be for people to understand and observe my competence. We can't talk children into high self-esteem. High self-esteem is based on competence and contribution. So even to a child to say, you know, oh, gosh, you know, I know that was a hard game and everything. And I have to tell you, I was really proud when I saw you and the guys go congratulate and help the coach with the soccer balls. A lot of times just being like a video camera to feedback what you have seen and then hear what the child reacts to. So I think it's more important feedback than just, great, you're the best, you're the top, you got a trophy.
Great advice. We have a question from a listener who says, great show, Chris, thank you very much. She says, I wonder if you can draw any parallels to the overpraising of children and the same issues for managing employees. What a great question.
Oh, I'd love to hear what you have to say on that.
Well, I will, perhaps my position on overpraising children, giving them trophies just because basically they showed up. There is a great parallel that one can draw of the proper praise and reward to employees as you do with children. An employee, as I said earlier, they have the advantage or the benefit of the preparation of having the rules and regulations explained to them. And they know that there is a box that has been drawn, and let's call that the sandbox, and they are in the sandbox, and they have to act within the rules and the parameters inside that box, and they have to play nice with one another. At the end of the day, the most important thing is that they have to do what is expected of them as the tasks and whatever their job requires, and they have to do that, hopefully, not at the minimum level. So if I, as an employer, and over the years I've employed over 1,000 employees, if I, as an employer, reward an employee by tapping them on the back and say, oh, that's a good job, because they sent an email and that email did not have any spelling errors on it, or it was grammatically correct, what am I really doing? What am I really saying? Am I saying that, you know, you're doing a great job, but by doing, simply because you did exactly what was expected of you? Because had they done anything that fell short of that, had the the style and tone not been right, had the grammar been incorrect, had the communication had spelling errors, that to me is a pretty bad thing. And certainly rewarding just minimal performance would almost say that if you don't screw up, you're really doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's not what praise is for. What I praise an employee is when they really went above and beyond what is expected of them. And again, what is expected of them, let's underline that, because employees do know what's expected of them. Children, unless the parents have gone through the due diligence of telling them what's expected, then everybody flies by the seat of their pants. When an employee handles a situation, let's say, I'll give you a real example. There was not too long ago that my second in command here in the company went about a significant effort in convincing me that I should not be going about a certain communication the way I intended to go, because I saw it from my viewpoint, and usually I have the presence of mind to balance it pretty well, but on that particular occasion, I did not. So we had a few spirited conversations over the phone, and I was out of town at that point, and she said, well, the only thing that I'm going to ask you to do is do not send that correspondence today. Sleep on it, and if you feel that way tomorrow, then I'll send it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she said it made me very much think about what was happening. But again, I needed to walk away, get some fresh air, and rethink it. Well, I did exactly as you said. I slept on it, and the next morning I picked up the phone and called her about that piece of communication and thanked her profusely for convincing me to not send it. And so that is where praise is supposed to be given. That is when somebody does something at potential harm to themselves. Because, again, I'm not the kind of boss that if somebody opposes me, you know, I'm going to take action against that person.
Uh-huh.
But I need to be convinced that if I'm wrong, you need to show me that I'm wrong. This is not your opinion that I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I need the facts. And she actually produced them, and produced them in a terrific kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is, business would have been lost, I'm convinced, had I kind of acted the way I was going off cockeyed down that path. So that requires praise. That is praiseworthy. And that is somebody who needs to be put, you know, up for as an example for imitation, for others to learn.
Yes.
It isn't just doing a job. And I hope I have answered the question of the listener. And we're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be right back. I'm Chris FSCU. I'm here with my guest, Barbara Strumpf-Thompson. And you're listening to Straight Up with Chris on Voice America Variety Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
News, opinion,
hear me.
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you a father trying to figure out how to effectively communicate with your daughter? Perhaps you're a working mother trying to juggle the weight of running a business and a household. Entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, mentor, and coach, Chris FSCU understands the challenge of being a working parent. In the last 20 years, he founded several businesses, bought and sold companies, hired over 1,000 employees, while raising his daughter as a single dad. It is the parenting of his daughter that he considers his single largest accomplishment. Chris is now sharing his lessons on how to be a mentor, communicate effectively, and cultivate leadership principles for your business and your family by using the same skills and concepts common in all well-run businesses. His book,
CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood, explores his relationship with his daughter and how he was able to negotiate his way to professional and personal success. Visit www.cdochiefdaddyofficer.com for more information on his book, speaking engagements, and other offerings and activities.
Think of the world 50 years ago. Now think of this same world and how it'll be 50 years from now. Did you know that if the world's population continues to grow at its current rate, our children and grandchildren will only have 25% of the resources per capita that our parents and grandparents had? We must preserve the foundation of a quality standard of living. That foundation starts with Go Green Radio. Join your host, Jill Buck, for Go Green Radio every Friday at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Voice America.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to Straight Up with Chris. Real talk on business and parenthood with your host, Chris Efesiou. If you have a question or comment for Chris and his guest, please call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. If you'd rather send an email, please send it to chris@straightupwithchris.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Straight Up with Chris. I'm your host, Chris Efesiou. I'm here with my guest, Barbara Strom-Thompson. And just before we went on break, we were answering a listener's question, and thank you so much, all of you, for sending your questions in. We will try to answer as many as we can, and we'll take another question now. This comes from Barb in Bethesda, and she says, I've read your chapter in, like, whatever, lots of great advice. And I understand your concern with overpraising children to the point where it becomes harmful to any real sense of accomplishment. So could you please give an example of some more appropriate or effective types of feedback or encouragement, say for a school project or an athletic effort? What a great question.
And so in terms of, I'm not quite sure if she means overall in terms of...
A specific example of... What would be an example of appropriate praise? Let's say, for instance, when a child does well in a project or in an athletic effort.
Yeah. Okay. So that let's just say it's a group from the student council and they're planning a new dance, a different social thing or a dance. And in terms of recognizing, rather than say, I might say, it looks like you guys are having so much fun, or this room has not been empty since you guys set the plans, so that you're there and you're encouraged, and just with your physicality instead of standing at the door watching and waving, you know, especially with a lot of adolescents, you get the feeling, gosh, do they think I'm weird or out of place here? But to just notice what they're doing, enjoy it, to say, I wonder if someone who's working on the props or whatever, you seem very artistically inclined. Are you interested in art? And to just have some just open-ended questions that then they can and take and go. And I think with giving feedback, I am a firm believer in writing notes and putting them in a child's lunchbox, or if the student council did something very brave, to write a note and leave it. And especially adolescents, they're not especially going to thank you for that note, but I guarantee you they'll keep it and that they'll learn. And we all need thank you notes. And we live with so much gratitude. But I think that kind of, more than just good job, but what I noticed or how this is different from last year, or you're sticking with this. I know that first that first committee meeting, what didn't end as we expected. So that, what we really want to focus on is resilience. That kids who, you know, it starts to get a little rocky and then they kind of quit because they're not up, they might not feel up to the support of the student council, position. But, and sometimes just with kids just moving a little closer and stooping down or sitting there, and a lot of, you know, communication begins in silence. And if we're there and, we're there for the right reasons, I think that, you know, the welcome comes a little, more easily for the students, and also just that sense of, you know, I really enjoyed this and thanks for letting me do this. I will say, this kind of leads me to another point that I think is so subtle that with kids, there's sensitivity to this, but when I'm teaching parents about noticing the positive, about, you walk into the playroom, all the toys are picked up. You must have worked a long time. But what a lot of parents do is then go, but the door, the drawers are still open. Oh, it looks great, but the drawers are still open. And I can't tell you how many parents have told me, some with tears in their eyes, that they had a yes but parent.
Well, it's the glass is half empty versus half full,
yes.
Isn't it? And that is very hurtful to anyone who is at the receiving end of it, regardless of age, and
right.
and regardless of position. And I am no parenting expert, but I do know that hurt me as a child when I was at the receiving end of that, and it makes sense that
yes.
It would be hurtful. So next week, in time for Father's Day, we will discuss the development of the culture of a championship fathering to solve the present fathering crisis. Now, listen to these facts. Currently, more than 25 million children, that's 33% of the children in this country, live apart from their biological father. In urban communities, 75% of all children born since 1975 will live some portion of their formative years with only one parent. The solution rests on our shoulders, the shoulders of fathers. We are seeking to create a national movement that will end the crisis of father absence and replace it with a culture of championship fathering, says Mr. Kerry Casey, Chief Executive Officer of the National Center for Fathering, fathers.com, who will be my guest next week. I hope you will join us then. Barbara, we are nearly out of time. Do you have any parting thoughts, any golden nuggets of wisdom for our listeners?
Well, Chris, I just think if we had that fatherhood initiative and put our resources and our smarts, it could change our whole society. And I work with some highly motivated fathers, and I happen to have a wonderful father, and I think that is an initiative much overdue, and I will be listening to that. That sounds very exciting.
Well, I will tell you, I have personal experience in that because I was raised by a great father, and then as luck would have it, I turned out to be a single dad to a 7-year-old daughter whom I raised from that age to now. She is almost 25, presently on her honeymoon somewhere in the seas around Italy. Happy as can be. And I can tell you that I never realized as a youngster the impact that the father's encouragement has had, but I certainly realized it as a father, and I gave it plenty. So without question, you will need to come back to the show at some future time because we only scratched the surface. I thank you so much for your time and clarity of thought, and I hope you will come back and join us sometime.
I would love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Our broadcast next week will be live from the Barnes & Noble bookstore in Bethesda, Maryland, following which I will be doing a presentation on and a book signing of my book, CDO, Chief Daddy Officer, The Business of Fatherhood. I hope you join me then with my guest, Carrie Casey, CEO of the National Center for Fathering. That will be next Thursday on the 14th of June at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk for Business and Parenthood. Until then, seize the moment, every moment, at work and at home. I'm Chris Efesiou. I'll talk with you next week. So long.
Thank you again for tuning in to Straight Up with Chris, Real Talk on Business and Parenthood. Please join your host, Chris Efesiou, again next Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time and 6 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Make it an engaging week at work and at home.